stories, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi reiterates that those behind the assassination of top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani must be brought to justice. Several UN agencies demand the immediate and unconditional release of a chronically ill Palestinian teenager held in an Israeli jail without charge for over a year now. The inflation rate in the UK climbs to its highest level in 30 years, fueling concerns about its impact on household budgets. Welcome. Iran's president says top general Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated by the U.S. 2 years ago, was a hero belonging to the entire Muslim world. Ebrahim Raisi says the killers of Lieutenant General Soleimani should be brought to justice.
Qasem Soleimani and his associates were heroes in the fight against terrorism in Iraq, and they were killed. Someone wants the oppressor to be seen as being oppressed, and the oppressed to be seen as being the oppressor. But our people understand that. They know who is committing oppression in the world.
Raisi said former U.S. President Donald Trump, who ordered General Soleimani's killing, must be held accountable. The Iranian president made the comments in an exclusive interview with Russia Today during his trip to Moscow. Raisi also spoke about the ongoing talks in the Vienna talks to revive the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. The Iranian president said his country takes the talks very seriously. He said there are real grounds for reaching an agreement if other parties are ready to remove sanctions, that is. Those sanctions were imposed by the U.S. after it unilaterally withdrew from the JCPOA in May of 2018.
The eighth round of talks aimed at saving the agreement known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, between Iran and world powers, is steadily moving on. The Iranian delegation led by Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri-Kani has been in constant meetings with representatives of the three European signatories of the deal, Britain, France and Germany, EU coordinator Enrique Mora, as well as the Russians and the Chinese. Progress has been reported on talks concerning Iran's nuclear commitments, but there are still differences when it comes to the removal of US sanctions and the Iranian demands for verification and guarantees. Tehran says it wants assurances the US will not withdraw from the agreement again or reimpose sanctions. European and American diplomats have been voicing their concerns about the pace of the talks. An advisor to the Iranian team, Professor Mohammad Marandi, says the only reason progress is slow is because the Americans are resisting the notion that they have to give up sanctions.
I think the most important thing is that the Americans and the Europeans have still failed to remove sanctions or agree to remove many key sanctions. That is simply unacceptable for Iran. If the Iranians are going to put a cap on elements of its nuclear program, there has to be a change, a clear change in the eyes of ordinary Iranians with regards to the sanctions regime. It has to be broken. Iranians have to feel that the Americans and the Europeans no longer have their hands on their throats.
Russian lead delegate Mikhail Ulyanov, who's been in frequent meetings with the American team led by Robert Malley, recently tweeted, "It's time to learn the lessons from the failed maximum pressure policy of the Trump administration." Iran says although there's been significant progress on technical matters, differences, including those in the area of sanctions lifting, require political decisions mainly by the Americans that, if made, can lead to a durable agreement within a short period of time. Omar Lizki, Vienna.
Iran, Russia and China kick off joint military exercises in the Indian Ocean. The drills are called 2022 Marine Security Belt. Tactics such as rescuing a burning vessel, releasing a hijacked ship, and shooting at air targets at night are practiced. Different units from Iran, Russia and China are taking part in the drills. From Iran, over a dozen naval units of the Army and the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps are participating. Spokesman for the drill is Iranian Rear Admiral Mustafa Tajuddini, says the exercises are aimed at enhancing cooperation between the three countries to protect maritime security. The ongoing exercises are the third jointly held by Russia, Iran, and China over the past several years. To get more on the goals of the ongoing naval drills by Iran, Russia, and China, I earlier spoke to the spokesman. We actually spoke to the spokesman of the drills, Rear Admiral Tajuddini. Let's take a listen.
Allow me to mention the motto of the drills. The motto is "All together for the peace and peace and security." So, the main goal is to enhance security and peace in northern part of the Indian Ocean, because it's one of the most important maritime routes with respect to the transfer of energy and global commerce. In the past 3 years, the three countries have had common interests, and we also we're going to have plans, future plans with the Indian Ocean Rim Association states, and these are aimed at enhancing security in this part of the region.
Our correspondent Youssef Jalali earlier joined us from the site of the joint drills taking place in the Indian Ocean. He explains why the region is strategic and why enhancing security there is important.
The drill tries to invite all of the regional and international actors in the Indian Ocean and in the Indo-Pacific region to join hands for a collective security, because this region is highly vital and strategic when it comes to international shipment of oil and other energies. The north of the Indian Ocean is a region that hosts more than 50% of the entire global oil transit, and more than 50% of the global oil production is conducted here in north of the Indian Ocean. That is why naturally it is associated with numerous threats, including piracy and maritime terrorism.
Several UN agencies call for the immediate and unconditional release of chronically ill Palestinian teenager Amal Nakhli, is held in an Israeli jail under the regime's so-called administrative detention policy. The UN's Children Agency, the Human Rights Office, as well as the UN's Agency for Palestinian Refugees, have issued a joint statement. They say Amal suffers from a severe autoimmune disease and needs constant medical care. He was arrested in November 2020 for throwing stones at Israeli soldiers in the occupied West Bank. Amal has remained in jail without charge or trial. 2 weeks ago, Israel extended his administrative detention. Now the UN agencies say his family and lawyers still do not know why that happened. The agencies have urged Israel to end administrative detention of children under international human rights law. Welcome to this edition of News Review. Please stay with us. In the UK, consumer prices are going through the roof as the country is facing its highest inflation in three decades. Inflation jumped to 5.4% in December. That is while the latest rise in wages was at an annual rate of 3.8% in the 3 months to November. The soaring inflation is deepening a cost-of-living crisis. In the UK, prices of food and energy, as well as transportation, have already risen and expected to go higher in spring. The Bank of England is now under pressure to raise interest rates to cool spending and bring down inflation towards its 2% target. Several factors are to blame for the situation, including Brexit and global supply shortages fueled by the COVID pandemic. Well, I'm joined by two gentlemen from London to tell us a little bit more about the situation. First one being my good friend there on our correspondent, Saeed Pour Reza, as well as Professor Rodney Shakespeare out of the British capital. Professor, it's good to have you with us as well. Both of you gentlemen, thanks for giving us your time. I'm going to begin with the latest situation, perhaps, and find out firsthand what it looks like in London and elsewhere through Saeed.
It is definitely London Arash, perhaps we can look at some of the reasons why the inflation rate in the UK is at its highest in three decades. The main culprit is supposedly the pandemic, as well as Brexit. And what they have done is they have prompted some employers, for example, to raise the wages in order to cover the labor costs. That's okay, but that has itself become a problem because they have to pass some of that to the consumers in order to cover their labor costs. The pandemic, again, and Brexit have led to disruptions in the supply chain and higher shipping costs. That also has contributed to the inflation. And on top of it all, energy globally, that has meant higher energy bills for the households here in the UK. As you know, they are planning to increase the regulator called the called Ofgem has raised the energy cap, that's the amount of energy a household is supposed to pay annually, by nearly $1,000. That's £790. So if you are have been paying £1,200, let's say, on energy annually, now you'll be paying up to £2,000. That starting in April. That really is putting a squeeze on people's finances in this year of the squeeze. Commodity prices or household items prices have gone up, as I explained in my piece yesterday, from bread to eggs to fresh fruit, to transportation, to clothing. Everything is rising at a very fast rate. It's striking how fast that is happening. The problem, of course, is that the wages are not keeping up with the rising prices. Although they, I understand that raising wages is itself a problem because people tend to want to buy more, and that contributes to the inflation. What we're going to look at in the coming months, as early as February, is the Bank of England increasing the interest rate. The idea is to make borrowing more difficult, that hopefully will lead to people buying less, and that somehow contains the situation. But the fact of the matter is that this increase in the energy cost is going to push a lot of people into poverty, into energy part of poverty in particular. And so really more pain is on the way for the average British households. Also remembering that over the past year, 2.5 million Britons have had to rely on food banks to get by, Arash.
Right. Many thanks. Of course, that's a grim picture. Obviously, for my next question, I'm going to ask you, how, what kind of impact do you think it's going to have on the morale of the people there? Not really good news there. Professor Rodney Shakespeare, of course, our man in London, explaining the situation for us to a great extent. And of course, as I said in my piece, it is blamed on the global shortages, on COVID and everything else. Does this look like to be the entire reason behind what we see today in the UK's economy, sir?
No, it's not the entire reason. The overall reason is the malstructure and defamation of the economy in several respects. One, for example, is the preposterous increases in wealth right at the top. And if you want to know why they are always having parties in Downing Street, now you know why. But the middle classes' real incomes are going backward. And the poor, they only have insecure jobs, gig economy jobs. Mm-hmm. And into that, you have this inflation, well described by Saeed, that inflation where the two figures are actually double what the government says. There are other aspects to this. If you're young and you think you want to own a house, as they all do, why not? They won't succeed. And if they do succeed, they will be bankrupted when the prices now drop down. The whole thing is out of kilter and distorted, and it is there for the benefit of that tiny elite middle class is going backwards, and the poor are now being screwed by this insidious, sinister inflation. As for how they're going to stop it, they will raise interest rates. And when they do that, the debt levels, which are now completely out of control, will result in the collapse of the whole economy. So you've got a system, a situation which is not capable of being corrected, because the whole thing is wrong, and they only concerned with the interests of that tiny group at the top.
All right, many thanks, Saeed Pourreza, my good friend and our man in London, with that update, an expanded one, very good one, Saeed. Rodney Shakespeare, professor of economics out of London, I really appreciate the insight you gave us, sir. Thank you very much, and have a good day in London. And thank you for staying with us. Welcome back. Asian markets fall following drops in U.S. stocks and tumbles in the oil market. Japan's Nikkei slid 1.6%. Outside the country, MSCI's broadest index of Asia Pacific shares was down 0.8%. Chinese shares plunged as well. A Hong Kong benchmark lost 0.24%. Chinese blue chips lost 0.5%. Also, in Asian trading, U.S. futures dropped, with the Nasdaq losing 1%. The Nasdaq dropped inside the U.S. as well, closing 1.3% lower. Dow Jones Industrial Average as well as S&P 500 slid. U.S. stocks are under pressure because the Federal Reserve is shifting policy to a tightening mode focused on tackling inflation. Concerns over the Fed's monetary policy also resulted in oil prices drops Thursday. And that's it with international news. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Eight-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said.
Contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Clashes between security forces and drug traffickers along Iran's eastern border with Afghanistan and Pakistan is a part of the natural scene. But Iran is putting its foot down now in demanding international cooperation in fighting what's actually a global problem. This country has lost enough financial and, more importantly, human resources and youth in tackling the problem. And its resources are thinning. Iran's neighbors are many and its borders varied. So single-handedly handling incoming smuggled goods and people is not easy. For a look at the issue of border security and the drug and smuggling problem, stay with me, Leila Faramarzi, on Iran Today. The economically challenged Sistan and Baluchistan province in Iran's southeast is perhaps the greatest go-to zone for smugglers and no-go zone for everybody else. It has been an ongoing scene of occasional clashes between government forces and not just drug traffickers, but some militant groups. It is where Jaish-e-Adl, a separatist group affiliated with Al-Qaeda, operates. Gunmen wanted by Iranian law have used Pakistan as their safe haven to organize and train, just simply crossing over into that neighboring country. Dr. Yazdan Panar is a geopolitics professor who analyzes issues with a look to geostrategic details surrounding them. We met him at the geography faculty of Tehran University.
Establishing border security usually requires joint efforts between the two nations. One of the challenges Iran is facing is that it has too many neighbors. We have 15 neighbors, making us the world's third among countries with the most neighbors. This makes things more difficult for us. Bilateral ties determine the security of the borders. Iran shares 9,000 kilometers of border, 8,863 kilometers of which is a common border with its neighbors. Those stretch along rivers, across mountainous areas, vast deserts, and sea crossings. Iran has these complex border areas. The reason you're looking for should be investigated by examining the structure of the shared borders.
The geographical location of the country, particularly its 1,923-kilometer-long eastern border with Afghanistan, the world's largest illicit opium producer, and Pakistan, has turned it into a major transit country for illicit drugs. In response to this challenge, the country has built one of the strongest counter-narcotics enforcement capabilities in the region over the years. Dr. Fallahi is an MP on several parliamentary committees, which means she gets to observe how things are panning out on the field. She shared her views at her office in Baharistan, home to parliament or majlis.
The Islamic Republic of Iran is perhaps one of the few countries in the world that have been paying human and financial costs fighting the smuggling, especially drug trafficking. But unfortunately, it doesn't have the capacity nor the facilities to stop the transit that's also affecting other nations. European countries have made promises to provide Iran with equipment and facilities and pay for some of the costs, but this hasn't happened yet. If this trend continues, although we'll be affected somehow, other countries will suffer the consequences. If you don't stop it at the origin, you'll find yourself in major trouble.
The UNODC World Drug Report of 2021 estimates that in 2019, 90% of the world opium, 72% of the world morphine, and 20% of the world heroin were seized by Iran. This country spends millions of dollars annually on border control, which includes constructing barriers along its borders with Afghanistan and Pakistan. We got to make a visit to the anti-narcotics headquarters in northwest Tehran for a chat with its spokesperson, Dr. Lotfi. Here's what we heard at the source of the action.
We stated the equipment we need in a letter to the United Nations and to the executive director of the UNODC, Ms. Kada Fatiwali, who also has the UN's Vienna office. There's a wide range of equipment we need, but the most important are border management and control systems. Today, countries can no longer protect their borders by building walls and putting up fences. For example, in some geographical areas, there are sandy deserts that are constantly moving. This means that building walls isn't a viable option.
Of countless accounts, a particular incident cannot be forgotten as it marks New Year in tragedy. On January 1, 2022, Iran lost three guard members as they clashed with an armed criminal gang in the southeast. The bloody event left at least five bandits dead too. Last July also, armed bandits shot and killed four guard members in the same province, Sistan-Baluchistan.
If they don't help us today, they'd be facing a deluge of migrants, drugs and terrorists tomorrow. The Islamic Republic of Iran is not acting as their representatives, but it's been located at the forefront of the fight and in a way is acting as a barrier preventing those from reaching other nations. If they don't help us with that, they'll have to deal with troubles in their capitals later on.
Armed outlaws and smugglers ramped up their act in the borders and central and eastern provinces of Iran beginning in 2021. And by armed, I mean equipped with all kinds of smart weapons and heavy equipment, leaving Iranian police soldiers to fight an unequal battle. Given it's the equipment as well as the cost of preventive measures while this country is under U.S. sanctions.
If major Western powers hadn't been behind the drug mafia in Afghanistan, the situation there wouldn't have been like this. That holds true about weapons trafficking and many other destabilizing issues that are caused by external forces in the region. They've brought instability wherever they go, but because of their media imperialism and power, they're portrayed as the good guys.
Some 40 Iranian police officers lost their lives in clashes with armed traffickers and outlaws between March the 21st and December the 3rd, 2021. This brought me to the question, has Iran been left alone as part of the general norm with the West, or do Western powers just not care about really fighting drug cartels which actually pay for their wars?
The U.S. spent billions of dollars in Afghanistan. It doesn't come as a surprise if Washington wanted part of its money back. What could be better for them than using Afghanistan's natural climate for cultivating poppy and officially recognizing it as having medicinal uses to export it to the U.S. and other nations? The Americans were behind a 13-fold jump in poppy cultivation in Afghanistan, but they don't believe that they have affected the illegal drugs market around the world. They would argue that Afghanistan's farms are perfect for poppy, and cultivating any other plant won't be financially reasonable. Therefore, to keep the Afghan economy going and keep people employed so they won't join the Taliban and conduct operations against them, and at the same time earn back a bit of funds they spent on Afghanistan, they chose to cultivate and sell poppy.
Western parties to the Iran nuclear deal, or JCPOA, delayed talks to press Iran into further commitments of scrapping its ballistic missile program and pulling out of involvement in its own region. So I asked if Iran couldn't demand as little as help with a problem that is European as much as Iranian, given Iran is a direct natural smuggling route from Afghanistan to Europe. Saying that, it's a passage Iran has controlled at the source to secure Europe from an influx of drugs and immigrants.
Fighting drug trafficking by the Islamic Republic is totally different from that in Europe. Iran is the first frontier. Drug trafficking is interrelated with other issues, including terrorism, border clashes and the like, and constitutes threats to Iran's national security. I have this question for the European and Western nations. How do you treat those who threaten your national security? Do you treat them peacefully, out of humanitarian considerations? I don't think so.
Talking of controlling smuggling routes, the use of maritime routes for the trafficking of drugs and illicit chemicals from and to the region has become a big since 2012. That alone poses a major challenge to border control.
The other thing relates to maritime border security issues. Maritime borders are partly determined by international conventions, including the 1982 United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, which is approved by all countries that have coasts, including those connected to international waters. There you can clearly see how major powers are contributing to this. The reason is also clear. The smuggling is done partly by major powers, those that manufacture products in bulk but can't sell them in lucrative markets like that of the West Asia. That makes smuggling quite attractive for them.
While Afghanistan is the number one narcotics producer, its neighbor Iran is the world's number one drug buster, with a high addiction rate of its own. UNODC, the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, hails Iran's leading role at a global level in drug control campaigns, and it even gave this country first place in the discovery of heroin, morphine, and opium. According to UN figures of 2000, Afghanistan produced about 200 tons of narcotics, but by 2018, it had grown to 9,500 tons. In other words, the production of narcotics had increased 50-fold, which doubled the need for prevention efforts. As an example of ties between Afghanistan and Iran today, in Nimruz, smugglers carry goods from potatoes to fertilizer and fuel from Iran into Afghanistan. And from Afghanistan, the world's largest heroin and opium exporter, others bring drugs and humans into Iran. As with Iran, U.S. sanctions on Afghanistan have hampered trade with Europe and states south of the Persian Gulf. And so, Iranian business has filled the vacancy, leaving well over 50% of supermarket shelves stashed with Iranian products. Time for a short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Looking at the martyrdom of over 3,800 individuals and the injury of more than 12,000 members of Iranian law enforcement forces, only in the field of counter-narcotic plans, Kazem Gharibabadi, Iran's Deputy Judiciary Chief for International Affairs, was moved to write a letter to the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. That would be Michelle Bachelet. Coming up after the news review section with Mohammed to portray a more positive picture of the border and trafficking situation in telling of unity among forces, neighboring countries and civilian residents.
I'm Mohammed Ghor and welcome to another news section. Generally speaking, protecting a country's borders from illegal movement of weapons, drugs, contraband and even people while promoting lawful entry and exit is essential to security, economic prosperity, and national sovereignty. And so in this episode, we're taking a look at Iran and its fight against drug trafficking and the heavy price and challenges of border security. First, we have a report by Al Monitor titled Iranian Border Leader Visits Pakistan and Participates in Defense Exercises. The article, which was released after the head of Iran's border guard visited Pakistan on January 12th, says Brigadier General Ahmad Ali Gudarzi arrived in the Pakistani port city of Karachi to meet with defense officials and partake in a maritime training exercise. He met with Rear Admiral Mirza Fahd Amin Beg, who heads Pakistan's maritime security agency. Gudarzi called for increased cooperation between Iran and Pakistan on their maritime border in the Arabian Sea. He specifically mentioned rescue operations, fighting crime, and deterring illegal immigration. Gudarzi also came to Pakistan to participate in the Pakistani military maritime defense exercise. The drill focused on several security-related exercises, including oil drill responses and security operations. Meanwhile, Tasnim has released a report on the matter titled, Top General Hails Sustainable Security at Iran's Southeast Border. The article reports Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces Major General Mohammad Hossein Baghaei saying the Iranian military forces' strong performance has led to sustainable security along the country's southeastern frontiers. Speaking to reporters after 2 days of visits to the border areas in Iran's southeastern province of Sistan and Balochistan, Major General Baghaei said the situation at the boundaries has improved remarkably and the security along the southeastern frontiers has become growingly better in the recent years. Highlighting Iran's perfect intelligence and operational control over the border areas, the commanders said the unwavering efforts by the police border and IRGC forces have resulted in the reduction of crimes, insecurity, and drug trafficking in Sistan and Balochistan. The general added, fortunately, Pakistan has also taken appropriate measures in building border barriers, developing police stations, and increasing the number of border guards, and is working in full coordination with the Islamic Republic of Iran's border guards. Another report by Tasnim cites an Iranian commander saying Iranian armed forces' deterrent power is evident in border areas. The commander of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, IRGC Ground Force, underlined the unity of the armed forces in ensuring the country's security and said their deterrent might is manifest along the country's borders. Speaking at a ceremony in the northeastern city of Mashhad, Brigadier General Mohammad Pakpour described unity and collaboration among the army, IRGC, and police as a necessary infrastructure of ensuring security in the country. Thanks to the unity and constructive and sincere cooperation, the manifestations of the Iranian armed forces' deterrent power is evident all over the country's border areas, he stated. The senior commander also hailed the active contribution of residents of border areas in upholding security, which he said has frightened the counter-revolutionary elements. Thanks for joining me in this episode's news section. And now, back to Layla.
Here's what Ghareeb Abadi wrote. I expect you, Madam Commissioner, to counter the instrumental, politicized and selective approach in the field of human rights. Apart from condemning illegal and unilateral sanctions against the Iranian people, especially in providing the necessary equipment for the police forces in their unequal campaign against terrorist groups and international traffickers, as well as condemning the martyrdom of law enforcement personnel by these groups and traffickers.
In a joint action with the judiciary, we announced the 40 deaths to the UN officers. By documenting this issue, we want to remind the West that they're taking a selective and contradictory approach towards Iran. While Iran is dealing with these issues and paying the costs, they refuse to help under excuses ranging from humanitarian issues to sanctions. The sanctions are posing challenges for us. We can't get the equipment or drug control headquarters and security and law enforcement agencies need because of the sanctions.
Iranians are alarmed over Afghan drug traffickers crossing into Iranian territory. However, in August of 2021, Jalal Settar, a deputy commander of the Iranian Police Border Guard, stressed that Afghan immigrants are treated with respect and dignity and are often returned to their home country. Every day, an average of 2,000 Afghan nationals are requesting to enter Iran from the borders, he said. That's because they fear a new civil war since the Taliban took over the capital Kabul on August the 16th. Although the Taliban have promised to establish a comprehensive government comprised of all ethnic groups.
There are many challenges threatening our borders, but there are some major ones, including migrants coming in from countries that can't create ideal living conditions for them, like Afghanistan, where one group has taken the helm of the country and is yet to form an inclusive government. The other is smuggling both goods and drug trafficking. Smuggling goods can severely affect and undermine the rules and regulations of our economy.
In the meantime, a lack of a regional organization dedicated to fighting trafficking is dearly felt. In my opinion, Iran should convince regional countries to form an organization against the smuggling. The same thing that Europe has done with its three institutions that even monitor the entry of migrants who can be stranded for months along European borders. A considerable number of the migrants are usually deported despite getting there after making dangerous journeys through the Mediterranean, which kills thousands of them. The European institutions are responsible to prevent this.
All said, the border police official Setare expressed an added concern, warning of plots by the United States against Iran in cooperation with its puppets in certain states in the southern shores of the Persian Gulf.
Iran can't convince the international community with mere words. In my opinion, to put pressure on them, Tehran must open a free corridor for them so the Western nations that are consumers of illegal drugs can understand what Iran is up against. It's no joke. Iran has been paying $5 billion a year to fight illegal drugs. That's apart from the human cost. That is killing 1 to 1.5 law enforcement officers every day.
On the Pakistani side, end 2021, General Qamar Javed Bajwa described terrorism as a common enemy of Iran and Pakistan, stressing the need to activate a joint committee on border security. He also stressed the need for closer cooperation with Iran on issues relating to Afghanistan, especially in the fight against terrorism. Over the past decades in Iran, the use of drugs has been a major source of social harm, such as divorce, crime, and infectious disease. To combat the present rise, in spite of conditions caused by the coronavirus and harsh sanctions, drug detection increased by 41% in 2020, thanks to efforts by anti-narcotics police.
The international community's actions haven't been proportional to what the Islamic Republic of Iran has been doing. As I told you earlier, Iran has been spending $1 billion a year to fight this. But the United Nations contributions have been something between $12 to $15 million. Compare this sum with the budget Iran is spending.
To take a look at police action in the capital, in May 2021, the Iranian border police got to seize more than 38 kilograms of various types of drugs from individual traffickers at Imam Khomeini International Airport. That was by means of the new body scanner secured by UNODC Iran from the donating government of Japan. There was a considerable 250% increase in drug seizure since installation of this new device by the end of the Iranian year 1399. That's 20th March 2021.
One of the excuses they make for the politicized and selective approach is the Islamic Republic's harsh treatment of drug traffickers. I think this is an excuse because the West disregards two issues. First, Iran considers distinctions in dealing with people involved in the illegal drugs trade, the addict, who we call substance abuser, and the other is the trafficker. The West doesn't recognize the difference in our dealings with the two types of people. Iran, in its comprehensive document for treatment and prevention of drug abuse, recognizes the right of treatment for addicts. The harsh response is aimed at traffickers.
To move westwards in showing the Iranian challenge cross-country, in May 2021, an Iranian officer was martyred in a clash with armed outlaws trying to cross the country's western border in Kurdistan province. Iranian troops were patrolling the borderline in Dadanakhi region near Marivan when the armed clash erupted, General Alireza Marzbani said. The border guards did inflict heavy losses on the hostile armed elements in the clash, sending intruders fleeing to the mountainous areas on the other side of the border. The Iranian border police, the IRGC ground force, and the army ground force are tasked with protecting Iran's land borders. This country does have more than 6,000 kilometers of common land borders with Pakistan, Afghanistan, Armenia, Turkmenistan, the Republic of Azerbaijan, Turkey, and Iraq.
Considering the enormity of the threats, we believe we have to decide on the defense and security budget separately from the public budget. We need to manage the security budget before dealing with expenditures and revenues. We believe that we must not allow our defensive powers to be undermined. Armed and security forces can do their jobs well if they're concerned about their economic and financial security.
That'll be it for today. Thanks from the whole team. With any results or new incidents, we'll do another show on the same. Bye for now.
Seventh Imam, Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salatu wassalam, is actually known as Babul Hawaij.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام خير الأمور أوسطها.
زيارة الإمام موسى بن جعفر الكاظم عليه السلام.
السلام عليك يا مولاي موسى بن جعفر ورحمة الله.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome, dear listeners. I'm your host, Mehdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam. Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and Imam Musa al-Kadhim was also the seventh divinely appointed Imam from among the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. We find in the various books in which Islamic historians and biographers have written extensively that Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam's personality was full of noble qualities such as generosity. And so historians have unanimously agreed that Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam was the most generous of the people, and he was the greatest among the people when it came to giving to the needy. It is said that his purses were proverbial, so that the people had said, "We wonder at him to whom Musa's purses come, while he would still complain of poverty." And so, generosity is one of those noble qualities which can be seen clearly in the beautiful personality of Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam. These, dear friends, are his dialogues.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام خير الأمور أوسطها.
Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam stated, "The best matters are those of the middle way."
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, we find in these amazing and golden dialogues of Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, this divinely appointed Imam, that he talked to his companions of which they needed to know. Meaning there were certain things that Imam al-Kadhim believed that an individual, a Muslim, and a human being should know. Now, Imam al-Kadhim then said to his companions that I have found the knowledge of all the people encompassed by four things. Number one, you should know your Lord. Number two, you should know what your Lord has done for you. Number three, you should know what your Lord wants from you. And number four, you should know what will make you abandon your religion. Now, in this conversation between Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam and his companions, of course, these four things that have been listed by Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam are incredibly important. And even though they seem to be four relatively small things in this list, but each one of these things is a world in it of itself. Number one, you should know your Lord. You should know who Allah is. You should know Allah's attributes. You should know Allah's names. And then you should know the depth and the complexities and the profoundness of these names. Truly, knowing your Lord will lead you towards Tawheed. Number two was that you should know what Allah has done for you. All the blessings Allah has given, all the trials and tribulations He has saved you from and repelled, all the trials and tribulations and tests that He has helped you walk through, all of the things, material and spiritual, that Allah has given you. You should know what Allah has done for you. Number three, you should know what Allah wants from you. What are the halal, the obligatory things, the allowed things? What are the haram, the things that are not permissible, the things that are prohibited for us? The various religious injunctions, the religious rulings that we must follow. These things, we must know what Allah wants from us. And the fourth thing, we should know what will make us abandon our religion. These are, in essence, those weak points that we have, which, if we were to be faced with them, we would abandon religion. And so these four beautiful points from Imam Al-Kadhim alayhi salam, when he was speaking to his companions in this dialogue, talking about all of knowledge encompassed in just these four things. This is dialogue, Imam Al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program Dialogue. I'm Attar, the producer of this program, and at this moment I invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Abbas Mirza about Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
The seventh Imam, while the poison was given in chains and his rule departs his body while he was still in chains, his body was brought and put another chamber. They said, we have to take this body outside because they are Rafidis, because they are lovers, they are Shias waiting outside for the news of the Imam. So they say that, what we gonna do with these chains? They say, cut the chains. They started cutting the chains. Imam's body is there. They took the body outside and they placed it on the bridge of Baghdad so that everybody should come and look at the body of the Imam. And look at the body, that there are no wounds. Imam has not been hit. Imam has not been persecuted. Imam died natural death. That's what they wanted to portray, because there were a lot of revolts taking place at that time. You know, there is a great family member of the Imam who became Shaheed as well by revolting, and other revolts were going, and also many started believing that the seventh Imam is the 12th Imam, is the last Imam for some reason. So they wanted to show the body of the Imam, that this man have died. He is no longer there. The leader is no longer there. The whole, you know, uprisings that is supposed to take place should not take place. So they brought the body and they put it on the bridge of Baghdad. Have we ever heard that any Imam's body laid there under the sun for 3 days, people coming, and they say that as the love and dedication and loyalty to the Imam was so much that people started bringing flowers from different places, placing near the body, and the smell of flowers, the fragrance of flowers was circulating in the whole of Baghdad from very far. And that hour comes as well, when Imam Rida alayhi salam moves forward, takes the body, gives the ghusl and buries. And we also remember another body, which was the body of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.